I'm Rechard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 138 for the weekend starting Friday, 20 November 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll still find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No advertising dressed up as editorial.
No, we actually respect our readers at Tech Central. On Talk Central this week, we chat about Telkom's decision to walk away from a deal with Cell C.
Also this week, we chat Mark Barnes' appointment as the new post office CEO, Telkom slowing ADSL growth, and Microsoft Windows has turned 30.
Right, let's get the show on the road. Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rupert?
How's it, Duncan?
We started recording this outside a few minutes ago, but the wind was so bad we decided to move it inside.
At least we're getting some rain now, so we're not going to complain too much.
Finally
about that
cooled down a bit after last week's crazy heatwave.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on with the show. Lots to talk about this week, but before we even start there, I think we're planning to introduce some changes to the podcast over the coming weeks. We had a meeting with the radio legend, I guess I could call him. He might be a bit embarrassed about us calling him that. But we met with Malcolm Russell, who has given us some advice on what we can do to improve the podcast and introduce some new elements to it to make it a more listenable experience. Hopefully get increase engagement and also get new listeners to the show. So we're going to start introducing some of those changes this week already, and look out for some additional changes we're hoping to introduce as the year comes to a close. But one of the things we're going to start, a new feature, in fact, we're going to introduce from the show this week is we're going to introduce a quiz, if you like. No prizes, no gadgets, not yet anyway. We may look at doing prizes at some point, particularly if we ever get to the point that we've just been discussing for some time, Rechard, of doing a live show. Because once we do a live show, it'd be quite fun to give away some prizes live on air.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. C's got the best know-how in the industry.
Indeed, but we thought a bit of fun, keep this thing a little interactive. Perhaps start with a quiz each week. 5 questions. They'll really look at what's been happening in the tech scene. So test whether you've been reading Tech Central and other tech news websites, but hopefully only Tech Central. So a bit of fun on the show. We'll give you the answers at the end of the show, see what you managed to get out of 5. So each quiz we run each week is going to be based on current affairs that week. So the only rule is don't go and Google the answer. Anyway, Rechard, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, let me do. Okay, so the first question. Mark Barnes is the new CEO of the Post Office. He also co-hosts or perhaps co-hosted a TV talk show on current affairs. What is the name of that show?
Not an easy question.
No, that's a tricky one.
That is a tricky one. The second one. Cell C is controlled by a Dubai-based group called Ogier Telecom. What is Ogier's stake in Cell C? We're looking for the percentage.
And the third question. MTN is not only in trouble in Nigeria. It's been fined by a court in Uganda as well. What has it been accused of? And we are not looking for detail here.
Fourth question is, the SABC board has suspended the broadcaster's CEO, Frans Matlala. How long had Matlala been in the job?
And the last question. Former Core Group Executive Director RJ van Spaandonk is heading up a new company, Mobile in Africa, which is launching which international smartphone brand in South Africa?
There we go. That one's quite easy, isn't it?
Mm.
Anyway, 5 questions. We're gonna give you the answers at the end of the show, see what you know of those. We might just recap them in the middle of the show. But let's get on with the news, Rechard.
Yes.
And there's a heck of a lot to talk about. The first is the news that broke yesterday, that Telkom and Cell C are no longer in talks, which is an interesting one. I've spoken to both parties, and it really does appear as if they couldn't agree on price. Apparently, there was a difference of many billions of rand in what Telkom believed the business was worth and what Ogier Telecom was seeking for it. Now, Ogier Telecom, the parent company, owns, and here comes one of the answers from the quiz, 75% of Cell C. So a very interesting development, given that Telkom had, for the past 4 weeks, been conducting a due diligence investigation of Cell C. So they've been looking at the company's books and really trying to formulate a valuation for the business. Now, when this sort of thing happens, there's the immediate question that needs to be asked is, did the interested party find something horrific on the targeted company's books or some other thing that said to them, "Whoa, we can't do this deal. Mm-hmm. There's something seriously wrong here. We need to walk away." Speaking to both sides and speaking to sources both close to both companies, it appears that that is not in fact the case, and that the primary difference here is over the price of the asset that they just couldn't agree on. Now, the question is, where does this leave Telkom, and where does this leave Cell C? Telkom, of course, let's go back a bit in history. Telkom had a 50% stake in Vodacom until about 2008, 2009. They then divested that stake, selling 15% of it to Vodafone and giving Vodafone control, management control of Vodacom, and the rest was made available to Telkom shareholders. Telkom then, a year or two later, I think it was in 2010, launched a mobile network of its own, became the fourth mobile operator in South Africa with the launch of Ata, which was a brand that was later dropped in favor of Telkom Mobile, and now simply Telkom. And that business has really struggled. It's lost a lot of money over the years. But under the new CEO, Sipho Maseko, they've made some very good progress on that, and they say it's going to be operationally profitable in this financial year, which is to March next year. So they've done well, but they're a tiny business in the scheme of mobile in South Africa. Telkom Mobile has about 2% of the market, if they're lucky, or between 1% and 2% of the market. Cell C was licensed in around 2000-2001, and they had a very troubled start to life. They ratcheted up, I think, about 8% or 10% of the market, but they never really made major waves until Alan Knott-Craig, or actually, to be fair, probably his predecessor as well, Lars Reifeldt, who really started to shake things up with the rollout of the 3G network. But then Alan Knott-Craig took it a heck of a lot further, and they've managed to really grow their market share in the last 3 years, first under Knott-Craig and now under the current CEO, Jose Dos Santos. And they've got about 22% of the market now, measured by SIM cards, not by revenue. I think by revenue they're probably sitting around 10 to 15%. But they've had massive growth. Perhaps Telkom needed Cell C more than Cell C needed Telkom. But I think the merger would have been a good one for consumers. It wouldn't be a return to the duopoly days of MTN and Vodacom, where prices were high and there was unwritten rules about what the pricing should be. I think that three players in the market would probably be sufficient to ensure that there's robust competition at a price level between the players. But now that they can't agree on a price and they've walked away, where does this leave Telkom? Telkom continues as a very small but profitable mobile player without scale. Unable really to compete effectively against MTN and Vodacom, although they've been punching above their weight, especially in terms of mobile data broadband services. They've done quite well there with very aggressive pricing, but they're never going to be a major player without a tie-up with one of the other guys like Cell C. Cell C itself is sitting on a huge mountain of debt, although the shareholders say that debt is quite manageable. Its base they get lower ARPUs from their base, lower average revenues per user than MTN and Vodacom, which have big contract bases. And I think a merger probably would have helped them, but clearly the shareholders haven't been able to agree on a price. So I guess Cell C is going to, they're still continuing with a review of Cell C. We don't know what other deals might be waiting in the wings. So there may be still some corporate action around Cell C. We'll have to wait and see. If there isn't corporate action, if there isn't someone else waiting in the wings at Cell C, then I suspect that 6 months, a year down the line, we'll see Telkom and Cell C back at the talks, back at the negotiation table. And I suspect that what will happen is that Asia Telecom will probably lower its expectations on what Cell C is worth, while Telkom might add a little sweetener. But I think those talks could resume at some point if Cell C isn't sold to someone else in the interim.
Yeah, those will have to be hard negotiations. But like you said, if they're not going to get anywhere until then, before then,
yeah,
it's going to be a must.
Yeah. So interesting times. Telkom walking away could simply be a negotiating tactic. But they run the risk of another player coming in and snapping up Cell C. Although, if Telkom's not prepared to pay that sort of price, who else will? Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe someone, maybe an international player that could pay in euros or dollars. It looks quite a lot cheaper when you're investing in buying a rand-denominated asset.
Mm. No, it's good. We're going to have to rewind the clock next year and actually see see where we ended up.
Yes. Anyway, we'll keep a close eye on that. Telkom's share price, interestingly, rallied massively on the back of the news. It rose by just on 10% yesterday after they said the talks were off. Suggests that the sort of shareholder relief that they're not going to do it. But I suppose that the deal could have ended up in Telkom having to go through some sort of rights issue, which would have diluted the value of the shares for ordinary shareholders. So that's probably why there was a relief rally yesterday after the news came out. So, very interesting news from the post office yesterday, and very unexpected, I think. And that's that Mark Barnes, who's I guess you could call him a veteran of corporate South Africa. He's worked in private equity quite extensively, formerly with Brait, now runs his own JSE listed company called Purple Group, where he's executive chairman. They're an investment business. He is taking on the role of CEO of the post office, hopefully not a poison chalice, but I think widely welcomed that the post office is bringing in someone with decades of experience in the private sector to run a state-owned enterprise. And he's talking a good game. He's talking a big game. He's saying that he wants the post office to be profitable. He says there are great assets in here and there's lots that can be done with this business. I hope he's not, underestimating what the challenges of turning around a defunct organization like the post office, which is basically bankrupt.
Mm.
But he's making the right noises. For example, he's saying e-commerce should not be seen as the post office's enemy. We should embrace e-commerce and turn it to our advantage, which makes
good thinking,
eminent good sense. Thinking, yeah, turn it into a partner of the e-commerce providers.
Look, if they get to act together, I mean, I don't know, they're very far down that road and it's going to take a lot for that turnaround to happen. But he makes a good point. You know, if they can embrace the e-commerce movement and really come to the party, delivering same day, 24-hour reliable services.
Yeah.
I mean, same day, if they can do same day, they've got the network, they should be able to do that. They could knock that ball out of the park and really make it very tough for some of the other courier services to stay ahead of the game.
Yeah. So if they can get that right, and there is tough competition in the courier space. But if they can get that right, I think the post office could be. Because, we saw Mr. Delivery Mr. Delivery.
Yeah.
Because of the high cost of courier charges in South Africa. And they saw that as a way of really driving down the cost for delivery of e-commerce products. So if the post office can come in as a low-cost delivery vehicle for e-commerce, it could also fuel an e-commerce boom in South Africa. But there's a lot of structural issues they need to fix at the post office before it can become a world-class organization capable of doing that sort of thing. I think he's going to be spending at least the first 12 to 18 months just fixing the mess that he's going to be inheriting before we can even start to look at launching new products and services like that.
And then it's going to start taking a while before the trust factor gets back into it, because a lot of people aren't going to necessarily trust the post office again from the beginning, from the revamp, so to speak. I mean, I've probably got a few parcels waiting in that big warehouse of theirs I'll never see.
Yeah. Me too. So a lot of consumer distrust that's going to have to be rebuilt, and that obviously takes time. He's been appointed for a 5-year term, which I think is the sort of time you're going to need to turn this thing around, and it can be done. I mean, look at what Sipho Maseko and Jabu Mabuza have done at Telkom. They've done what they've done. When did Sipho start as CEO? I think it was in 2013, April 2013. Yeah, what he's done in 2.5 years, quite remarkable. So it can be done. Although arguably the post office is starting at a much worse point than Telkom was when Sipho Maseko took over as CEO.
And they really only have one or two players left, I think. I mean, they have to choose their game carefully, and if they do support the e-commerce industry and do. You know, I don't know if the postal side of it is ever going to recover as nicely as what it should.
Yeah, I think they've lost a lot of that business during the strikes and all that sort of thing. It'll just never return.
Mm.
I mean, I know that I changed a lot of my... I get through the post office, I only get bills.
Yeah.
And I converted most of those to emailed invoices. And I'm certainly not going to switch back to being delivered through the post office.
Definitely.
Probably just, I just don't believe I'll see them.
Mm.
I think it's an interesting appointment. I think it's a good appointment. But I think, I think I worry that he's perhaps underestimating the scale of the challenge he's taking on. And also, it's quite a politically charged environment. So, you know, I hope the way he talks, you know, he talks about a partnership with the government. So maybe he's got his head, his sort of mentality around how to deal with the issues correct already. But, you know, he's going to have to manage those political relationships, which are never easy. And Sipho Maseko Telkom's got Jabo Mabuza as the chairman who helps do that. I don't think he's going to have a similar position or a similar person at the post office protecting him.
But also he's going to have to... I think the other problem that I see is obviously you've got a workforce that's been working in a particular way that I don't know if you will be able to restore them to, you know, a normal post office employee. You know, if you look at the guys that may have started looting, may have started stealing parcels and packages. I think the workforce will need some work as well to get them back to a state of trust with the company.
Yeah, and being a state-owned enterprise, it's going to be difficult to fire the people who need to be fired.
Mm.
And I'm sure there are a lot of people in there that need to be fired.
Let's hope.
Anyway, we need to take a message from our sponsors. We'll be back right after this.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Daddy's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Daddy's gonna download you a bazillion things.
With Fat Pipe from Vox Telecom, you get free data between midnight and 6 a.m. every night. That's an unshaped high-speed internet lullaby for the ears. To get yours, visit voxtelecom.co.za.
Lots of news this week. Telkom's results were on Monday, the interim results for the 6 months ended 30 September. And one of the things I wanted to pull out of those results was their ADSL growth, which has really slowed down dramatically. And Sipho Maseko, the CEO, did speak to this at the results presentation, which was held at their new campus in Centurion in Pretoria on Monday. You know, a lot of people, in fact, Hilton Tarrant wrote a piece this week, I thought very good, asking whether we've reached peak ADSL. And, you know, he asked some interesting questions. You know, first of all, ADSL is an expensive product, no matter which way you look at it. You've got to have the basic line rental, you've got to have the ADSL line rental on top of that, and you've still got to pay for the data. But
you have to have your telephone line.
Exactly, you have to have a telephone line. But the... they're also being challenged. They're being challenged by mobile, and we saw that in Telkom's latest results. Their mobile data sales jumped by 68% to 700 million rand, which is a huge growth. It's the fastest growing part of their business. But one has to wonder, with them offering these great 4G LTE offerings to the home market, whether they're cannibalizing their ADSL base. But at the same time, you have to wonder whether the slowdown in the growth of ADSL is also the result of companies like Vumatel.
Mm.
You know, are people cancelling their ADSL subscriptions because fiber providers are arriving in their suburbs? And is that having a meaningful impact at this stage on the ADSL subscriber base? And so Hilton asked, have we reached peak ADSL? And he says, probably.
I would agree with him. I mean, I'm smack in the middle of it where that we are busy with the rollout in our neighborhood.
Mm.
And everybody that I've spoken to in that neighborhood is cancelling the ADSL outright. You know,
yeah.
Are they going to do a VoIP service over their new fiber line?
Yeah.
Or they only use their mobile devices.
That's the other thing, is that people, once they get fiber, they realize they can go VoIP and they don't need a Telkom plain old telephone thing, just a fixed line anymore.
You can port your number too.
You can port your number to a VoIP provider and do make your phone calls over the internet, basically.
Yeah, no, it's
it's interesting.
And a lot of, I mean, if you look at not just the rapid deployment of fiber to the home, but new complexes, new businesses, none of these guys, or you know, established complexes and businesses, business parks, you know, most of them are getting fiber, so. The Telkom lines going into these companies are also starting to convert from Telkom to a fiber solution or a VoIP solution, which I think is hitting them hard.
And the last mile has been the last vestige of their monopoly, and it's being eroded now for the first time. And I think it was the chief financial officer, Dion Fredericks, who made the comment during the results presentation. He didn't say which suburb it was, but he said there was an alternative fiber provider who came into a neighborhood. It could have been Parkhurst, I'm not sure. And he said that in that neighborhood where the alternative fiber provider came in, 70% of the Telkom clients in that neighborhood cancelled their lines.
Mm.
70%. That means that's a wholesale switch to the new provider, basically.
And, but that's about the uptake requirement for these fiber providers to deploy in your neighborhood, isn't it? Don't they want like a 65% or 60%?
They usually look for a 30% commitment from all the people in the neighborhood, whether they've got infrastructure or not. They usually look for a 30% commitment. But this is 70% of Telkom clients saying cheers, which is a big problem for them. Anyway, Sipho Maseko said in the presentation, blamed the slowdown in ADSL growth in the presentation on internal problems. He said the they've had issues with their field workforce, and they recently changed all their vans from I forget who the previous service provider was, but they changed it to Bidvest, apparently that caused some, the changeover caused some problems and some challenges. So that's what they're blaming it on. But one has to wonder whether it's a mixture of all of these things, including the new fiber providers that are coming into the market. Mm-hmm. And it must be deeply worrying for Telkom executives to see this happening. We'll know in the next set of results if it was in fact an internal issue, if the ADSL growth rate goes back up again. But if it doesn't, and in fact, if it continues to come down, then I think Telkom has a serious problem.
Yeah, and as consumers, I think I would say, if I put my consumer glasses on, I would say that it comes down to a cost thing. And if I have the option of going for something cheaper or potentially better service, I will switch every time. And from that point of view, if I look at people switching off their Telkom at least for better service, it seems like a logical choice.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Windows. Today is the 20th of November 2015. That means Windows is 30 years old today. Windows 1.0 was released on this day in 1985. Wow. What were you doing in 1985?
I think I was running around in the garden playing with my toys as a kid. Yeah, I was my venture into computers only happened in 94, 95, I think it was.
So which was the first Windows you used? Must have been Windows.
Windows 3.1 was the first one I used, but I remember I don't have many memories of Windows 3.1. I remember using it at school a lot, but DOS was the thing that I had on my home computer.
Okay.
MS-DOS 6.2 was the one.
6.2, I remember that one. Yeah.
6.2.2, I think it was.
Yeah, that was very stable.
I didn't have a computer that could run Windows, so that was a thing. It was a weird thing thinking about it. You didn't have a computer to run something as
was
basic.
Was it powerful enough? Was it a 286 or something?
It was a 286.
286, yeah. Okay. Yeah, my first experience was with Windows 3.0. I also don't remember it that well. I think I may have put it out of my head because of the painful memories, but it was pretty awful. There wasn't much you ran on it back then. You actually spent most of your time in DOS. Windows was this thing that you fired up occasionally. Oh, look at this. We can play solitaire. But apart from playing solitaire and Minesweeper, there wasn't much point in Windows back in those days. The apps only really came later. Photoshop started appearing. Slowly but surely, people started moving across it. But it wasn't a quick process, and people continued running DOS for a very long time. My first PC operating system was DOS. I think it was DOS 3.1 or something like that. MS-DOS. I'm going to MS-DOS. Was there a 4? I think it might have skipped from 3 to 5. I can't remember. MS-DOS 5 and MS-DOS 6. 6.22 was the one that was so stable. I remember installing Windows 3.1 for the first time. My first year as a student, I bought a PC. It was a 386 DX40.
Oh, nice.
This was a
40 megahertz raw power.
This was a high-end machine at the time. It cost me something like 12 grand. 40 megahertz, 386. It had I forget how much RAM it had, but it had a 40 megabyte hard drive. It had a floppy drive. And it was running Windows 3.1, and it was terribly slow.
But you didn't have anything to really benchmark to. You just knew that things took long with a computer, but you could do some cool things.
Yeah, and I used to play a lot of games on it in DOS-based games. There was no games for Windows back then. No games worth speaking of, anyway. And this was before. Was Duke Nukem out there?
No, I'm thinking of Doom. Yeah. Sorry, wasn't it?
Doom. It was out before Doom. Doom came out in 95. 94 or 95. I think it was 95. So it was games like Stunts and Test Drive, old DOS games. Stunts was a great game. We had a lot of fun with that one. There were lots of other games at the time. Oh, but, you know, things like Space Quest and King's Quest and all that.
Monkey Island, wasn't Monkey Island one of
Monkey
them?
Island, I think, was out around then as well, early 90s. Yeah. There were some great games, actually, some great adventure games. I was a big adventure game player. I used to love those Sierra games.
Sierra games. You're talking about Leisure Suit Larry?
Leisure Suit Larry, yes. It's so quaint these days. It was, just don't catch your parents, just don't let your parents catch you playing it back then. But
the graphics were so low. How could it ever be anything, for adult viewers only? It's so strange.
It wasn't really. I mean, it was actually quite funny, that game. The first one was quite rough, though, when you had to sleep with a prostitute above the bar.
Good old Larry.
I played all of the Leisure Suit Larrys, actually. But my favorite one was the one on the island. I think it was, what was it called? Something about pulsating Patty and her pulsating pectorals.
Yeah, I don't share that same memory.
That's how we got an education back then, you know. But my favorite was Space Quest. Roger Walcott.
Roger Walcott.
Great humor, yeah.
But DOS was only half of it. Then 95 started.
95, yeah, that was the operating system that changed it all. I remember the hype around then. I just started as a tech journalist, and I remember the launch of Windows 95. It was unbelievable. And Microsoft and IBM were at war at the time, because Microsoft had effectively stabbed IBM in the back, because IBM had been working on OS 2, which was a joint project with Microsoft. Microsoft walked away from it. It was secretly developing Windows 95 in the background. I remember I drove past the IBM headquarters in Sandton on the launch day. I think it was August the 24th, 1995, and there were people milling around with banners outside the IBM head office saying OS 2 warp. It's like an IBM protest against Windows. It was kind of fun. It was a brief war amongst users as well, OS 2 users and Windows users. It didn't last very long. IBM lost horribly. Windows 95, it was launched with Bill Gates and the Rolling Stones, I think, played a set, if I recall correctly. Lots of celebrities on the stage. It was quite a thing. And it went on to be an incredibly successful product. And that, of course, led to Windows 98 and
awful.
Did you ever use Windows Millennium Edition?
Yeah, I used every one of them. I was an update junkie. I loved all the updates, all the new features, all the customizations. But Millennium Edition didn't last long on my computer.
No, mine neither. I think I had it for a week and went back to 98.
But there was also 98 Second Edition.
Yeah, which fixed some of the bugs, but it was still buggy.
It was
a terrible piece of software.
And then didn't we, you also, when did Windows 2000 come out? Was that 99 or was it 2000?
I forget which year it was. I think it was 2000.
Because I remember dropping 98 for 2000, but then suddenly XP came back into the
picture. A lot of people did, yeah. Windows 2000 was a nice stable OS. It was based on the Windows NT core, which was the server operating system in effect back then. Yeah. And then, of course, in 2001, Windows XP came out, and that was a merger of the NT and consumer 9X lines, basically putting a fancy interface on top of Windows NT.
And it was a beautiful operating system.
For the time, it looked good at the time. It looks very dated today, especially the strange use of green and blue.
But it was modern. I mean,
it was modern then, yeah.
Modern.
And it's still used. I mean, I sometimes go and help my neighbors with their computers, so being a technical person, I think
that's
something you always end up doing.
You're the techie in the neighborhood.
Exactly. So many people are still running Windows XP.
If it works, it works. I mean, I think they probably outdid themselves with that one. And again, Windows 2000 is probably to thank for that one.
And then Windows Vista.
Old Vista.
Which was a bit of a...
So much hope and so much disappointment.
Yeah. And I think they spent 6 years developing it. It was a heck of a long time. And it was bloated and it was buggy. And they had all sorts of issues with device drivers, which was the main problem.
Yes.
And Windows 7 fixed that a couple of years later. And a lot of people swear by Windows 7, refuse to upgrade from it. Yeah. It's like a bit like XP, actually.
Yes, yes.
And then Windows goes in cycles. They have a good one, bad one, good one, bad one. Windows 8 was a bad one, mainly because it was a kludge. It didn't really feel right. It was an attempt to respond to the iPad, I think. And then now we've got Windows 10, which is great.
Yeah, we love it. Love it, absolutely love it.
So 30 years. We've put a story up on Tech Central with screenshots of all of the old versions of desktop Windows. So
running down the memory lane. Yeah, it's well worth checking it out.
it's quite amazing to see how far we've come. There's a video as well which runs through the evolution in a couple of minutes worth watching as well. So go check that out on Tech Central's homepage. Cool. I think that covers the news for this week. I think we should move on to our winners and losers. Our winner this week is the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, which is not someone who is not someone we pick as a winner often. In fact, I think he's been on our loser category a couple of times. But we picked him this week because he must have been the person negotiating or selling the idea of Mark Barnes being the new CEO of the Post Office. We know that Cyril Ramaphosa has been involved, of course, in management there, so he may have had a big say over the appointment of Mark Barnes. And, of course, it was debated in Cabinet. But as the Telecoms and Postal Services Minister, I think he ultimately gets the credit for the appointment of a strong candidate who can hopefully start to turn around this dysfunctional organisation. So Siyabonga Ntwele is our winner this week.
And our loser is one that I would never have thought that we'd put on this list.
Yeah, sad, isn't it?
It's very sad to see a streaming audio service radio closing down.
RDIO. I was a happy subscriber to it, and still am, actually. The service is still working, and it will probably continue to work for the foreseeable future. But it's basically been placed into bankruptcy protection, and its assets are going to be sold. Some of its assets are going to be sold to Pandora. What that means, I'm not sure. But Pandora is not available outside a couple of markets. I think it's US and Australia and New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken, or the UK. I forget which ones it is. It's about two or three markets they're available in. So maybe this means Pandora is going to come to the rest of the world. That'd be nice. Radio is on its way out. So I'm actually not sure what I'm going to replace it with yet.
Yeah, you still have a few options, fortunately. I've been considering Google Music again with YouTube Red now.
YouTube Red, has that been launched? It's been launched in the States.
Yeah, but I mean, you still do your proxy bypass VPN service to get to it. It is, but you kind of have to. Even if you want Spotify, you have to do it.
Yeah.
I'm still very happy with Symphy, to be honest with you. I'm using it almost every day.
I must have another look at that. I didn't really like their apps. I'll have another look at it.
Yeah, look, it's fine. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the best application out there, but you can store your music offline. You can create your own playlists. It's got a web interface.
Have you tried Deezer?
No, I've never.
I've heard good things about Deezer. They've got a partnership with Vodacom. And they're available locally, so you don't have to use a proxy. And I've heard people saying generally good things about Deezer, so maybe I should have a look at them as an option.
Maybe you should, yeah.
Apple Music doesn't really appeal to me because I'm not tied into the Apple ecosystem.
And I've heard a lot of mixed reviews, and I've also tried it. It's not slick at all. Mm. It's not. It's iTunes type mentality. You know what I'm saying?
It gives me the shivers.
Got a lot of potential, but they just didn't execute as well.
Yeah. And if I have to fire up iTunes on my PC, I think I'd rather shoot myself.
Let's not go there.
So Deezer, I think I'm going to have a look at Deezer. I'll have another look at Symphy. I'd love to use Spotify, but I don't know if you want to have to go through the hassle of, especially when I'm out and about, and if I'm sitting in a hotspot, at the local coffee shop, do I have to fire up some sort of VPN software on my PC just to be able to listen to some music?
But, I mean, obviously, you also need to think of your mobile phone, because I'm sure you would use your mobile phone for music more often than you use your desktop machine.
I mean, I often pair my phone via Bluetooth to the stereo in my car and listen to streaming audio and on the go. So I don't want to have to install something on Android. Plus, I use my iPad. Plus, I use my Mac. Plus, I use my Windows PC. I use multiple devices to stream music.
But you only have to log in, I think, with Spotify once a month, once some 30 days or 70-day cycle. You have to verify. But, I mean, with just one last thing on the radio closing, or audio closing down, is the playlists. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about when I heard the news was, I've got so many playlists on my Symphy Africa account that are, obviously places I've built up over the last 2-3 years. And I don't think I can export them. And it's kind of, once you lose your playlist, there's songs in there that the order of them is very particular. Yeah. There might be a tune that might not come to the top of your mind, but you know that there was a few songs on there. And if you lose that, it's a
hassle.
It's kind of a big thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Wonder what the solution is. I think with the radio closing down, there was an option for you to export your playlists. I think they made that available to users. But
I'll have a look at that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to carry on using radio or RDIO, which I'm not sure how it's pronounced. I'm going to carry on using it until they shut it down, and hopefully there'll be some communication closer to the time exactly how they're going to migrate the users. Maybe maybe they'll move us all onto Pandora. Although Pandora is a different type of service.
Quite the same thing, you know, yeah.
It's disappointing. But maybe if with Pandora buying some of the assets, they'll redo it somehow and it'll continue to live.
Here's maybe it'll become a full-on streaming service like
that. Possibly, yeah.
Use all the technology in
that. Yeah. Anyway, that's our loser of the week. Very sad news. Radio, closing down. Sometime next year, sometime, I think it is.
Mm.
Cool. What's your pick this week, Griffith?
So there's a new little gadget that launched a while ago, and it's recently just landed in South Africa by a company called DJI. Now, you might know the name from the drone industry. DJI makes a range of really good quadcopters or drones, the DJI, the One, the Inspire, the Ronin. These are all really cool drones. But the product that I'm picking this week, and something that I can see myself buying within the next 6 months, is a product called the Osmo. And it's a gimbal-based camera, and what that means is it offers you steady shot type of steady cam type videography. The little motorized camera compensates for any movement, and it produces a smooth image. With the Osmo, what you do is you plug your iPhone in, so it's only compatible with your iPhone or with Apple at the moment. But there are versions for other cameras, as far as I remember, coming at some point. And then your phone turns into a viewfinder and a control, obviously, input. You don't need to connect your phone, but it obviously allows you to see what you're shooting.
Yeah.
And the footage is absolutely phenomenal. Smooth, steady cam type quality you'd imagine to get from a rig that costs you 20, 30 grand.
Yeah.
I've heard some mixed reviews about the low light, but when I played with it in daytime, it was absolutely brilliant. Phenomenal footage, and like I said, I can see myself using it quite often, especially if I'm on my mountain bike and I want to shoot some trail footage. It'll offer proper steady cam shots while connected to my bike with all the vibration of the gravel road.
Okay.
It goes for, depending on where you buy it, between 11,000 and 12,000 rand.
Ouch!
It's an expensive product, but it's if you're into shooting video.
What camera is built into that?
It's a 4K, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just quickly go to the specs here for you.
Sure. We'll put a link on the show notes so that you can access this, because I think you really have to see it rather than
it's
hard to describe it, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a handle, so I mean it's like a lollipop mic almost with a detachable screen.
There's the sensor there. The sensor details.
Yeah, so it's a 12 megapixel sensor.
Sony Exmor RCMOS.
RCMOS, 1/230 inch sensor size.
Oh, it looks pretty pricey, but it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, so 4K video is the maximum size it can do.
At look, what, 24 frames per second?
Yeah.
And 30 frames per second, is that, no, 30p, that's... it is frames per second. Yeah, 120p. Yeah. So it'll do full HD at 120 frames per second. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and that means 120 frames at 1920 isn't bad at all.
Mm.
Look, I mean, it might sound expensive if this is not really your thing, but anything comparable, if you do go for a proper gimbal for a camera for any other camera, you can expect to pay upwards of 15,000-20,000 rand. It's a much bigger rig too, so well worth checking out. But it's a very nice gadget if you want to get really good family shots, if that's your style.
Cool, we'll go check it out. It's the DJI Osmo. We'll put a link on the website to that. I am picking yet another book this week. It's my third in a row. But I'm consuming a huge amount of Audible over the last couple of weeks and really enjoying it. My latest pick is the book, and I think I briefly mentioned it last week, actually. It's the book by Ashley Vance, who's a very well-known technology or business journalist in the US. I think he writes for Business Week. He's written a very good book on Elon Musk called Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future. Mm. It's brilliant. If you're looking for a great book to read this December, get this book. You can see that he's an experienced journalist. He's really done his background research. He's interviewed tons of people, and he's interviewed Musk as well, quite in detail. So Musk's story, it's from literally from the horse's mouth as well. So it's not an unauthorized sort of biography. Mm. Not entirely authorized either, but it's a fascinating read and very detailed. And I was pleased to see he goes into quite a lot of detail about his history in South Africa as well. Kind of weird hearing all these South African names and talking about Bryanston High School and all this sort of stuff in an American book narrated by an American reader on Audible.
So, is this book about Elon Musk or it's about his companies?
It's about Elon and his companies. Okay, it's about both.
So, it's kind of intertwined. It's a biography. The story.
Okay, it is. Okay. But it talks about, you know, how he started SpaceX, for example, and, you know, how he got all these. And it goes back. Some of the history with PayPal is fascinating as well. How he started PayPal. How he was fired as CEO. Of the predecessor, really, of PayPal. They merged with a business called PayPal, which was run at the time by Peter Thiel. He was running a company called X.com, and he was fired as the CEO, stayed on, actually, handled it all quite well. But fascinating journalism. It's a big book, but it's worth getting, worth reading, and certainly for the South African angle alone, it's worth the listen or the read.
Sounds like great December time reading.
It is, absolutely. It's one of the best biographies I've read. So check that out. It's the full title is Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future by Ashley Vance. Great. Well, I think that's the show for this week. Before we do that, though, before we wrap up, though, we need to get back to our little quiz that we had at the beginning of the show. So let's run through that. Let's run through that quickly. Do you want to fire off the questions and I'll run through the answers?
Right. So the first question was: Mark Barnes, the new CEO of the Post Office, also co-hosted a TV talk show on Current Affairs. What was the name of that show?
Well, that was the hardest question I think we had in our inaugural quiz this week, and that's. The show is called Editing Aloud, and it's on Business Day Television. It's a great show, actually. I enjoy it. I try and watch it every week. It's with various editors and journalists from the Times Media Group. Usually have Peter Bruce, the editor of Business Day, on there, Ron Darby from the Business Times, and other hosts on the show. It's a good listen, and they talk about politics, current affairs, and the business and the economy. It's a good heated discussion usually amongst a bunch of editors, well worth watching. And Mark Barnes was a regular on it, and I'm guessing now that he's taking over as CEO of the Post Office that he won't be able to continue with that. But
Is that show available online, do you know?
I don't know. Try Business Day TV's website, it may be on there, but otherwise I think it's on every week on a Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, Tuesday or Wednesday on BDTV, which I think is channel 412. So, yeah, go have a look. Even if Mark Barnes isn't on there, it's worth watching.
So the second question was, what was Auger Telecom's stake in Cell C?
Okay, we actually answered that question during the podcast. That's 75%. The rest is owned by local Black Economic Empowerment shareholders.
The third question, MTN's trouble in Nigeria. They've been fined by a court in Uganda too. What were they accused of? And we weren't looking for detail. Remember that.
Short answer, anti-competitive behavior.
The fourth question was about the SSC board. It suspended the broadcaster's CEO. How long had Mutlala been in the job?
He'd been in the job for a whole 4 months.
Great stuff. And the last question. Former group executive director RJ van Spandonk is setting up a new company, which is launching which international smartphone brand in South Africa?
And the answer to that is obviously Xiaomi, the Chinese brand, which has been variously called as the... has been called as the iPhone of the East.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Looking forward to playing around with some of those products, yeah. Well, that's our show for this week. Mixed it up a bit this week, and we're going to be making some further changes in the coming week, so look out for those. Until next time, if you've got any feedback, tell us what you think of the format. We'd love to hear your views. Drop us a mail at info@techcentral.co.za from Rechat and myself. Until next time, cheers. Ciao.